Cybersecurity has proven a durable challenge for the federal technology community. To meet it, the leading executives are taking a two-pronged approach. They're pushing ahead with programs to update and modernize their underlying systems, and they're working to automate many of the cybersecurity processes so network staff can concentrate on the threats. I spoke about this with Todd Simpson, the CIO of the Food and Drug Administration.
I think that the path really started with the creation of the cyber strategic plan, which really came into effect around the same time that we released the strategic plan for the OIMT organization. So the cyber plan is embedded into the overarching strategic plan. And it really focuses in on the prevention, detection, and correction of incidences, insider threats, and making sure that we have a formidable security posture that's adaptive and ready to evolve with changing technologies. And I really think that the embodiment of all of these technologies that we're looking at, you know, and it is in this the continuous diagnostic monitoring suite of tools that we're really focusing. We're implementing our CDM phase two at the moment, and we're doing this all under the umbrella or inside of a what we call a systems management center. And we're really proud of this systems management center because it's pretty much our command center where all of these tools are being deployed from, all the monitoring, the dashboards, and the personnel that are watching are all stationed. And what's unique about the system management center is that it's a combination of the engineering, and the operational, and the watch desk kind of components that are typically found in a typical NOC or a traditional SOC. And so we've combined all these elements into one and added that engineering element so that as we're watching our threats, speaking to our threat landscape, you know, we get pelted with millions of potential attacks on a monthly basis. And in fact, in March alone, we recorded 1.66 billion attempts to penetrate our systems. That's just an example of the threats that we're dealing with. So this SMC is extremely busy. When we do have an incident, the SMC is positioned with our personnel having been aligned to these technologies to respond very, very quickly. So we do open tickets. We follow that whole idle process where we track everything that we're doing. But instead of the first stop being to the help desk, we have our engineers on the ground that are moving in tandem with the help desk and with the process of notifying and getting all the appropriate people in the loop. While that's happening, the engineers are already responding to the threat. So I think that the SMC, it gives us this kind of real-time capability to not only detect, but to respond.
So this SMC then is a physical place and also a gathering point for all the output of the monitoring software. Would that be a good way to describe it?
That's correct. The SMC is an actual physical place. It is the central hub where we monitor everything. In fact, I just want to make a note that we actually won a CISO 50 award that we're receiving in May for the work that we did with the SMC. So it's a really innovative design, and it is a physical location. And it's but also I should say that we have two physical locations. We have physical locations at both our headquarters and at one of our data center sites, and we're virtually connected through video conferencing in real time. So there's always two-way communication between those two locations, and we have the same connectivity back to our help desk. So it's a really slick model.
Do you also have communications, if necessary, say with Homeland Security, to share threat information you might gather?
Well, we absolutely do, just by virtue of the process. Whenever we have an incident, we have to report that incident. You know, if we have an incident of malware or something like that, we have to report that up to our partners at HHS, And by virtue of the process, it is reported to DHS. And you know, DHS works across the entire federal government to keep us all safe. But we, our protocol is, yes, to work through the HHS and through DHS and to ensure that everybody's in alignment.
I wanted to back up just a little bit, if you would, just give us a brief description of the overall infrastructure for IT at FDA that you are modernizing. For example, does it take in new elements of mobility that you might not have had before and cloud that perhaps you didn't have before?
Yes, specifically with regards to cybersecurity, the infrastructure that we're building out, everything that we're doing now has the security element baked into it. And even you know, to your question, you mentioned the cloud. We worked very hard in the beginning to build a cloud brokerage model. But what we found as we started to really rely on that brokerage model to do business is that it wasn't a standalone thing. It needed more. And so that's where we started to develop our security brokerage model that sits on top of that. And so the security brokerage model is that layer that watches everything, more or less the governance between the cloud, between the various clouds. The hybrid cloud model consists of a public and a private cloud. And so that cloud brokerage model sits there on top of the model. And everything that we do has to go through that security infrastructure. And in fact, as we're implementing our CDM phase two, we're cognizant of those tools that are watching our on-premise, but we're also cognizant of the tool sets that we need to look into and to invest into to adequately safeguard our cloud resources. So we're aware of all this, and we're working, I think, with our partners across the federal government to make sure that we have a very tight security posture.
We're speaking with Todd Simpson, the CIO of the Food and Drug Administration. And you mentioned, you know, phases of the CDM and CM continuous monitoring program. Early on in these programs, agencies were trying to simply monitor for whether their software they had installed was patched properly. They probably still do, but what else are people monitoring for? What are the threats that you feel that need the most, you know, in a risk management hierarchy, I guess, need most paying attention to?
I think that the threat landscape does vary from agency to agency. And I know that our challenges at the FDA are not unique. But we, you know, because we do deal in industry data that has a certain value attached to it, we do have insider threat that, you know, we're constantly on guard for. And of course, we have the traditional threats, you know, where we have, you know, the attacks, the brute force attacks to our network, the phishing attempts, the malware that comes in, the spear phishing. We have a lot of that. And I think everyone in the federal government sees that. And of course, you know, this insider threat problem is something that's, you know, we're becoming more and more aware of, and we're becoming more and more savvy at getting ahead of, I think.
So with respect to the industry data, basically intellectual property and research materials and test programs for drugs and devices that the FDA uses, but is not the FDA's own data.
Yes, with respect to that data.
Okay, and with respect to the insider threat, I wanted to ask you about that too, because people are starting to say, I've heard several cyber people say, what's the difference these days between an insider threat and an external threat? What constitutes the biggest insider threat? Someone clicking on a bad phishing message, or someone with maybe nefarious intent?
You know, Tom, it's actually a combination of both. We have the users that, or the customers that you know, are deceived. They click on that spear phishing link, and so we try to safeguard against them by offering security awareness training, through education, through example, and by just reinforcing the lessons. We spend a lot of time talking, and I've often bragged about my CISO here, Craig Taylor, who is extremely passionate about what he's doing, and anytime he gets the opportunity to work with people, to get ahead of that, that's something I see him doing. But, you know, no matter what, I think all agencies struggle with that, that spear phishing, that, you know, and that's why we do the penetration testing that we do to complement it and to kind of check in on it. And, you know, it never surprises me. We do the penetration testing. We still find offenders that still click on the link that says, I'm going to win $1 million if I click on this link. And it's just a continuous thing that you just got to do. Regarding the insider, the other aspect of the insider threat, the nefarious end, you know, I think you're always going to have that, but I think, you know, I like to think that people are generally good. And the people that are working at the FDA, I think, you know, most people come here to do a good thing and to serve the public. And I guess every once in a while, you're going to get someone who comes in and tries to do something. But I think we've put a tool set in place to watch the landscape very closely. And we have very good partners in the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security and the Securities Exchange Commission. So our partners are out there working with us. And when we do have incidences, typically we're ahead of it. And when we're not, we at least have the resources to deal with it. And so I feel pretty confident that, you know, that aspect or that part of our program is in pretty good shape.
I guess you must have tools in place that catch or notify you anyway, or flag, say, the proverbial 3 a.m. downloader and that kind of thing, the out-of-band activities that might indicate something to look further at, which could be legitimate, but you got to look at it.
Yes, I mean, we have invested heavily in our threat and vulnerability scanning tools, our AV, our antivirus tools, our web content filtering, our data loss prevention, our security and incident and event management, our intrusion detection and prevention, and our network and security monitoring tools. I mean, I like to look at it like a fence, and I continually try to shrink the size of the holes in the fence. And you're never going to close that fence up. And, you know, the threat's always going to be there, but you've got to continuously try to enhance those tool sets and make sure they're aligned with the resources you're trying to protect.
Let's talk about tools for a minute, because you have many of them. I think everyone, it's safe to say, has lots of tools. And each of these tools, or many of the master monitoring tools, you might say, come with their own dashboards, and the vendors expect that to be the one that your CISO staff and your security operations center staff looks at. And so if you have multiple tools with multiple reports, how does that all get added up into some cogent manner such that you're not tied to one vendor's methodology of reporting, but you get all of the information from all the tools in a way that's actionable for your staff?
It's a great question. And we have, you know, we have a federated environment here. So it's not just the dashboards that these tools render aren't just for my consumption. I'm a very transparent CIO. I produce a balanced scorecard report on a quarterly basis for my customers. And if you page through this balanced scorecard report, you'll see a lot of work has been invested into the creation of these programmatic dashboards that summarize our statuses. Well, we've spent a lot of time in those dashboards, but at the same time, we spent a lot of time perfecting our dashboards that the systems are generating. And I wish I could speak to the specific technologies. It's extremely hard to talk about these dashboards without getting into a little bit more specificity. But let me just leave it at this. These dashboards are focused on watching the specific things that we're trying to watch. And when it comes to, you know, the continuity of our operations, what we try to do is customize those dashboards as closely as possible to serve the needs of the most people. So let me give you an example. We've built these dashboards that talk about, so we integrate the data. So I have a security dashboard. I can tell you our threat landscape by looking at one dashboard. I can tell you our system status by looking at another dashboard. But what we've tried to do is integrate that information into singular dashboards. And we're actually working with our customers here at the FDA to roll these dashboards out. I host these quarterly meetings with the centers. And at all of my recent quarterly meetings, I've introduced this dashboard that my CTO has actually developed. And what the dashboard is really just an integrated view of the individual dashboards of all of these disparate monitoring tools that we have basically dashboards for in the SMC. So that's, I don't know if I answered your question clearly, but we have the master dashboards in our SMC, and we have a lot of eyes on those dashboards. And then we have summary type dashboards that we've developed that encapsulate a lot of that information from those individual dashboards. And we give that view to our customers. So our customers are actually able to watch their environments in real time. The tickets that are trending, they're able to see the systems that are going on, and there's a security component embedded in that too. So they have a lot of information, as do I. And then the SMC has a really deep depth view of the information.
And that has several pairs of eyeballs at a given time on all of these screens.
Correct. And the beauty of this is that sometimes I'm really proud of my deputy CIO who he really took these dashboards and he's really passionate about his business. And he actually was watching one of these dashboards in real time and he saw a node in a system go down or just turn yellow and he got ahead of it. And we were so far ahead of this that the notifications started to flow, the customers were contacted, and we were actually able to intervene before there were any issues. And it was just what I saw there was the power of these dashboards. Now, it was kind of an oddity because I'm not going to say my deputy sits in front of these dashboards and watches them, but I was so proud to see that tool service that way, that at an executive level we got ahead of a problem before the operations, and I'm talking within seconds of seeing it. So, you can put an SLA in place. This wasn't about an SLA. This was almost a real-time detection, and that is the power of these dashboards. So just think of the day when we fully automate these things and we set triggers to send alerts at certain thresholds. So when the node goes yellow, our SMC won't have to actually have their eyes physically on a screen. They'll just have to feel that vibration in their pocket or hear the ding and pull it out, and they'll be ahead of it. And that's really the future that we want to be positioned for.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. We're speaking with Todd Simpson, the Chief Information Officer of the Food and Drug Administration. I wanted to ask you about automation. And would you characterize your cyber threat monitoring and reaction as automated? Or what do you mean by automation? What should people mean by automation?
Well, and I think that example that I just gave where you have the threats moving to the right people in the right order, I think that that's an important part of the automation component. But maybe there's also an automation component that can do self-healing and intervention. And so that's some of the stuff that we're looking at. Like if you see something that looks suspect, it's like a credit card. If you are at a cash register in a Walmart and you use your credit card and then you forget something and you go to another cash register and try to use that same credit card again, typically it'll stop you. And that's because the experience, the artificial intelligence that's engaged in watching that credit card system has learned that that's suspect behavior. And so that's really, I think, the evolution of our security program, where we complement our monitoring with an intelligence that gets ahead and starts to trend and starts to react when threats are seen, maybe when our security people are on their coffee break or not watching. I don't want to say that. There's never, but when they're not physically watching, or maybe they miss the alert, maybe they lay their phone down and maybe their phone dies, but maybe we can build a threat posture that's more aggressive and more proactive after the fact.
So there's a machine learning, artificial intelligence aspect to this.
Absolutely. And I think machine learning and artificial intelligence is going to be a part of every area of IT within, a very short time. I think that we've now uncovered the power of the ability of software to evolve on its own. And to deny that on the security side of the house, I think would be denying ourselves a great opportunity to move forward. And I don't think we're going to be able to do it with how rapidly the threat landscape is evolving. We're going to need the help of artificial intelligence and automation to do some of the legwork, because the threat never sleeps.
And of course, now the threats are sometimes not written to a disk on your system, but they exist in memory and can execute in the cloud. So you've got more places to look, I think, than traditionally.
Absolutely. You're a very, very smart man, because I couldn't have said it better than that. You're absolutely right. It's another risk. It's part of that whole risk landscape, that what you don't know that's lurking and waiting to get you, that's right under your feet.
Now, several of the major vendors have, you could call them telemetry systems or ways of gathering from multiple customers, commercial and government and public sector, all of their threat data, and somehow anonymize it into their own analytical system so that people can benefit from the world's, or at least their customer base's, cyber threat experience. Are you part of any ecosystem like that?
So this is an area of our business that we need to mature on. So we do have several engagements in place where we're working across the federal government. And recently we started talking with some industry people about similar programs. And we're also looking at bug bounty type programs. And most of this is coming from those discussions and those interactions and that collaborative kind of playing field that we've established with our partners.
Because I was thinking, FDA has inspectors all over the world in different countries even. It's not just a U.S. activity that FDA is part of. And so maybe there's an opportunity for wherever those people are located, they could be sentinels for cybersecurity threats outside of the United States.
You're absolutely spot on, and in fact, we do work internationally. In fact, we work. It's so funny that you brought this up, because our sister agency in the UK, the MHRA, we work with the CIO there, and we've been talking with him about not only IDOL but security and devices and all kinds of things, because to your point, we have an international presence, and these problems, we can learn a lot from one another. We're all sharing the same threats. So, we are partnering with our international partners.
And just to clarify, you've mentioned IDOL a couple of times. You mean the Information Technology Infrastructure Library?
Yes, sir.
For CIOs, for CISOs, for really everyone in agencies, there's a lot of budget uncertainty. What are the best ways that you would advise your colleagues to make sure that cybersecurity gets its place in the sun as people think about 17, 18, 19 in their technology budgets?
It's an interesting but very difficult question to answer. The budget is something that I think has everybody very concerned right now. And all I can really say is that we have a plan for maturing our cyber program and for executing on our cyber strategy. And I would not be being honest if I said I wasn't concerned about budgetary impacts and how they're going to impact my overall program. But the message that I've given to my staff are that there are three areas of my business that we're not going to cut on. And the number one area is cyber. The second area is infrastructure, because infrastructure basically is a big part of that cyber. You know, when you're talking about rolling out data loss prevention, when you're talking about, these are, it complements infrastructure, but infrastructure is something that we have to continue pushing forward on, because the infrastructure is going to enable that digital transformation that's so important to us, and security is tied into that. And you may be surprised by this, you may not be, but the last area of the business that I'm not willing to cut on is the innovation end of the business. We have to continue to move the business forward, and that is an area that we cannot cut corners on. So when it comes to cyber, I will divert all of my resources to keeping the cyber program healthy. I made a commitment to to the Energy and Commerce Committee that that would happen. The FDA stands behind that commitment, and we will see our security program evolution through till the end. And I think that we'll look into other areas to save money, efficiencies, reducing the number of laptops that are out there, reducing the number of phones, or setting up more stringent criteria for who gets a phone. And, maybe looking at some of the lower hanging fruit and where we can pull in the belt without cutting our throats. And so that's why we cannot compromise on the cyber end.
Todd Simpson is CIO of the Food and Drug Administration. Tomorrow, in part two of the interview, Simpson details ways to get control over the many software tools agencies install to monitor their networks. We'll post this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.